The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
The president still think that crime is up because of the pandemic?
I think many people have conveyed that.
So when a huge group of criminals organizes themselves and they want to go loot a store, a CVS, a Nordstrom, a Home Depot, until the shelves are clean, you think that's because of the pandemic?
I think a root cause in a lot of communities is the pandemic, yes.
So if anything goes wrong, you can always, and there's a lot of things going wrong, by the way. But if there's anything that goes wrong, just blame the pandemic. You can see why they have to keep this scam alive, this hoax, Omicron. Now it's spreading rapidly, so they say, all of these mild cases of the flu. And that's the excuse. That's why people are smashing and grabbing things all over the United States because of COVID. So says the chief propagandist at the White House, Jen Psaki. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us for another week of broadcasting here at KPCG, the radio station here in central Oklahoma. Of course, the live stream goes out over our radio station. Also, it goes out over CRN Digital Talk Radio Channel 3. But you can get to the video stream at our website, thetrumpet.com. Just go to thetrumpet.com/live, and you can watch all of these programs. We post the shows after the live stream, too, so that you can listen or watch on demand. So after years, this movement to handcuff the police, or more recently to defund the police, to let criminals out of jail, to let them off on a few hundred dollars of bail, if even that. In California, there's no bail really to speak of. So they smash and grab, then they're arrested, and then they're back out on the streets before the police can basically even file a report. And so do you think that has anything to do with the skyrocketing crime statistics all across the United States, in all of America's big cities, especially in those cities with Democrat mayors, with these communist leaders? This is from CNN just a few weeks back. The United States has just recorded its highest increase in rates of homicide in modern history, according to the CDC and Prevention. It says here, the U.S. homicide rates rose 30% between 2019 and 20. It's the highest increase recorded in modern history. This has been the story right across the nation. One example, Chicago, I believe. They're at a rate of something like one homicide every 10 hours in that city. I saw a tweet last night. Six deaths, six murders just over the weekend. Another weekend in Chicago. And six more murders. They have about 10 or 15 every week. That's just one city. In Detroit, this is from the Detroit News back in September. In 2020, 14,370 violent crimes, which includes assault, robbery, rape, criminal homicide, were reported by the Detroit police. That's a 10.25% increase from 2019. It says further on, homicides nationally jumped 29.4%. So here again, the 30% jump in crime statistics. This was a report on Fox News over the weekend, clip 4.
You know, I just saw a statistic, which is quite amazing to me, that there were 11 smash-and-grab robberies reported throughout the city up till about a week ago, over a month-long period. 14 people arrested from those, all back out on the street, and you say that they're out in the street faster than the paperwork can be done. Explain.
Well, yeah, first we have to look, how do we get here? You know, the ACLU advocated for Proposition 47, which changed the sentencing guidelines. So right now, you can literally go out, do whatever you want, commit crimes, and you'll be out faster than the officers can finish the report. And that's a fact. You know, we're wondering, how many times does somebody have to be arrested here in LA before they stay in jail? It's sad to say, but it's almost safer to hang out with Alec Baldwin on a movie set than to go shopping in Los Angeles right now. That's how crazy it is. It is so violent. We're telling people, don't visit because we don't think we can keep you safe right now.
It's so violent in California. They're recommending that people just don't go out. It's so dangerous. They're going to get robbed or mugged or something. That was from Fox News over the weekend. This was Jesse Waters, same network, on his show Saturday Night, clip two.
Another major problem Joe's not doing a thing about, bail reform. The Waukesha Christmas parade attack left six people dead after Daryl Brooks Jr. purposely plowed his car into a crowd. A black nationalist and convicted sex offender with a felony rap sheet posted low bail twice this year after punching his girlfriend in the face and running her over with his car. Joe Biden dead silent on the Waukesha massacre, but wouldn't shut up about Kyle Rittenhouse last year. Disgraceful. Police officers that have been shot and killed in 2021 are at an all-time high. In almost every major city, murder rates are the highest they've been in three decades. Now Americans are loading up on guns at historic rates. Since Democrats aren't doing anything to protect them, they have to protect themselves.
It's a trend that's, as he says, it's right across the country. Every major city in the United States seeing these skyrocketing statistics. Crime, murder, burglary, robbery, smash and grabs. Andy McCarthy, he writes about the two horrific tragedies in Michigan and Wisconsin. It says, meanwhile, the suburbs of Milwaukee and Detroit both endured horrific mass murder attacks around Thanksgiving. In Waukesha, Wisconsin, career criminal Daryl Brooks allegedly killed six people and injured dozens of others, many very seriously, when he raced his SUV through an annual parade. In Oxford, Michigan, a tormented 15-year-old named Ethan Crumbly allegedly shot up his high school, killing four students between the ages of 14 and 17 and wounding seven others. It's interesting. There's so many different angles to these stories, but it's interesting and revealing to just see how that they're both covered. You look at how quickly the major media forgot about the Daryl Brooks mass murder. They just moved right on. Newt Gingrich had something to say on that. I think this is from about a week ago, but this is clip five.
If the president's spokesperson believes that the average American's dumb enough to think, oh, it's too big a problem for the president to visit, he doesn't want to take away attention, that is just a plain lie. The fact is that those families would have been deeply touched if Joe Biden had cared enough to show up and say how sorry he was that that happened. But it ain't going to happen because they're white and they're local and they were killed by somebody who's African American, and therefore in the racist politics of the Democratic Party, it's a non-event. It can't be allowed to occur because it breaks up the drama and it breaks up the narrative.
The racist policies of the Democrat Party, the same party that just screams racism, it's almost every other word in their sentences. This is from McCarthy's article. It says prosecutors in Oakland County, Michigan, have announced that the parents of 15-year-old Ethan Crumbly have been charged with involuntary manslaughter in connection with the alleged shooting spree at Oxford High School earlier this week, in which four students were killed and others injured and so on. When I heard this report on Friday, I thought that they're going after the parents. If you read the Trumpet magazine, if you've been reading it since way back in the year Columbine happened, I forget the exact year, you go back 20, 25 years in the Trumpet, and every single mass shooting, mass murder at school, we would delve into the subjects that most others would just stay away from. Parents, for one. Parents, most importantly. And then just our violent culture and video games and and antidepressants that so many of our young people, our children are on. And here, these parents, I mean, they're using criminal law to go after them, which Andy McCarthy says, look, you've got to, if you come at them, you know, with a civil lawsuit of some sort, okay, but you can't just start making up criminal law on the fly. And yet that's what's happening. And in one sense, you know, when I heard the report Friday, I thought, well, the parents, from the sounds of it, they deserve to be punished. But what about all of the others? What about Daryl Brooks, a career criminal? 20 years a criminal. Well, he's an adult and this other kid's 15, but they're charging him as an adult. And furthermore, Daryl Brooks' criminal career, that started way back when he was a young man. What about his parents? I mean, his parent, the press went after his mother, not went after her, but interviewed her, and she basically said, look, Brooks is a good guy. He's been failed by the justice system. He grew up with Christian parents in a Christian household. That's what we've learned in recent weeks from the major media, when they even want to discuss it. But now here's a case, this white family, of course. It's a white kid. It's a mass shooting. And this Democrat prosecutor, she's a radical leftist. So this is not about an equal standard for all. This again is about the guns. How dare those parents get that 15-year-old a gun? And they shouldn't have, to be sure. I mean, if we're judging all of this by God's standard, of course God would punish the parents. But look at the convoluted justice system in the United States of America. Look at how that when it's a radical communist, he's acting alone. This is an aberration. Every other connection he had was just perfect. Parents, the connection to BLM, the fact that he was a black supremacist, none of that matters. None of that factors in. We're not going to go after his parents. We're not going to go after Brooks's organizations that influenced him. But here they are now going after the parents of this kid who killed all those students. The violence in this culture. Genesis 6. Their hearts, their minds, they're on evil continually. The earth just filled with violence. And then you add to that, none plead for justice. I mean, on the one hand, you've got these radical leftist prosecutors who just want to let all these hardened criminals out of jail. But you get someone who really speaks highly of gun rights, like the parents of this teenage shooter, and we got to go after them too. You get people who support Donald Trump showing up at a protest in Washington on January 6th, we got to put them in jail. We got to incarcerate them. I wonder if Rashida Tlaib, who wants to let all of the criminals out of jail over a 10-year span, I wonder if that would include the three convicted of murder in the Arbery case down in Georgia or South Carolina, or maybe this school shooter or their parents. Does she really want to let them all out? All of her political opponents as well? What a system. What a system. Every man just doing what seems right in his own eyes. Judges 21-25. One standard for this group over here, another standard for this group over here. No problem. It says here, McCarthy does, but even before today, this is speaking of when they nabbed the parents, I guess the parents of this teenager were fugitives for about 24 hours. They found them, I believe, Friday or Saturday. It says here, even before today, the Michigan case was overcharged. Prosecutors filed a terrorism count against the teenager. He's a terrorist, this teenager. Now, I think they're considering that for Mr. Brooks. But here, Brooks had the connections to BLM and Antifa. He hated white people. And he's, I guess, not a terrorist, at least not yet. And yet, within days, within days of this 15-year-old shooting up his school, this disturbed, demon-possessed young kid, and the parents buying him a firearm. What in the world have we come to? And all of these signs along the way, shopping for ammunition at school, drawing pictures of blood, talking about how disturbed he was. You know what? Another angle of this story is the cover-up for the school officials, the principal, the superintendent. Why didn't they call? The sheriff's wondering why his office wasn't alerted to this. They would have acted on it. But no, keep the police out of it. And, well, until last week, the parents just need to keep their nose out of the school's business as well. But then now there's a shooter, and so all of a sudden, well, it's the parents' fault. Of course it's the parents' fault. Hey, the parents should have done more. Oh, really? They haven't been saying that in Loudoun County. In Loudoun County, they've been covering up crimes and then targeting parents. Now here they come. Here's another left-wing prosecutor targeting the parents in a very, very different way. You can't make any sense of all this. It's just an upside-down world. Isaiah 59, it talks about groping in the dark, and that's what we're seeing. There's certainly not an even standard, a one standard for all. Criminal justice. Look at all of the arguing and the bitter divide politically, even as we see our cities. They're so dangerous that some in law enforcement are saying, look, don't even go out. And then other businesses, they're shutting down early at night. Too much crime. McCarthy says, to be sure, the parents appear to have been utterly irresponsible. According to the charges filed in the hours before the shooting, they had been urgently summoned to the school because a teacher had discovered that Crumbly had drawn images of a gun that had been fired at a fallen body with the added inscriptions, blood everywhere, the thoughts won't stop, help me. And then he's shopping for ammunition and the mom texts him and just laughs about it. Yeah, hey, at least keep it secret. Don't show about the only people that did something sensible in all this were the teachers who tried to alert the parents, who tried to alert the principal, but nothing was done. School officials or parents. As I say, God would weigh in and punish them all. But in a world where the system of so-called justice goes after some, but certainly not others. What about the parents of all these 16-year-old gangbangers in Chicago or San Francisco? These young thugs that are just roaming the streets, smashing up stores, or even murdering people. I'd like to see if a Chicago prosecutor goes after the parents of a gang member. Well, they just did it in Michigan. Why not the same law for everyone? There's an agenda. Always, always an agenda. This Democrat prosecutor, she's all behind the defund the police. She's all behind just letting the criminals out of jail. But now, I mean, she's ready to lower the boom. Now she's ready to not only go after the 15-year-old, his parents too. The mom, the dad, yeah, that's right. Well, they made statements before that they were happy that Donald Trump was standing up for gun rights, the Second Amendment. So they must be dangerous, right? Go after them. Put them in jail, just like the January 6th protesters. Lock them up. Daryl Brooks, he had an interview. The Waukesha killer. The Waukesha terrorist. Well, let's have an even standard, right? Are we going to just be selective in our outrage? Or set up some kind of arbitrary system of justice where it just feels so random. Over here, I mean, lock them up and throw away the keys. And over here, let them out of jail. Let all of them out of jail. You think is this a stable and solid foundation on which to build a society? Society around us is crumbling. It's collapsing before our eyes. This is the New York Post. Daryl Brooks gave his first interview since the Waukesha attack. He says, I just feel like I'm being a monster, demonized. The poor man, he thinks he's being demonized. If he only knew, Joe Scarborough's not talked about him in a week and a half. He's a forgotten man. He's not being demonized. He's being ignored because he was a black supremacist. So that doesn't fit comfortably in the narrative. So just move on. Let's talk about the parents of the 15-year-old instead. Let's talk about guns. How that guns are the problem. Brooks' mother, she released this statement a couple weeks ago, or soon after that Waukesha mass murder. She says, Daryl did not come from a bad family, like many people have said. He came from a loving Christian family. In those years, he received counseling and was on medication. Well, she says he suffered from mental health issues. When he became an adult, a decision was made that he no longer suffered from mental illness. That decision left him with no insurance or financial means to pay for medication. And when determined, necessary counseling. Mental illness is not cheap to treat, but what's more important, dollars spent on treatment and recourses or lives lost. And she goes on and says that how the system really failed him. Certainly doesn't blame him. He was mentally disturbed. The justice system didn't work. And so he's a victim, she says. In this Ahmaud Arbery case, that conviction, I think that came down, I think just before Thanksgiving. And all three, not just the shooter, but the two other passengers in the truck, they were also charged with, I think it's called felony murder. So they got all three of those guys convicted of murder. And again, I don't know too much of the details of the case, but I mean, that's a justice system that not only lowered the boom on the man that fired the weapon, but the two that were in the general vicinity with him. Notice this story. This is from the Daily Mail. A former Georgia district attorney is facing 5 years in prison for allegedly helping to protect Gregory McMichael after his son fatally shot 25-year-old black jogger Ahmaud Arbery. So they're going after this former DA who, I guess, provided some counsel, some legal counsel, to the shooter's father. It says here, a grand jury on Thursday indicted former Brunswick District Attorney Jackie Johnson for allegedly violating her oath of office and obstructing law enforcement following the deadly shooting in February 2020. It says the indictment, which was first filed back in September, alleges that after his son, Travis, 35, fatally shot Arbery, Greg McMichael, 65, called Johnson's cell phone, having worked in her office as an investigator until he retired in 2019, and said, Jackie, this is Greg. Could you call me as soon as you possibly can? My son and I have been involved in a shooting, and I need some advice right away. So he called her looking for legal advice, I guess. Officers with the Glynn County Police Department investigating the killing also reportedly called Johnson for advice on what to do in the aftermath, according to CNN. And Johnson allegedly knowingly and willfully directed that Travis McMichael should not be placed under arrest, contrary to the laws of the state. It says the indictment further claims Johnson violated her oath of office by showing favor and affection to Greg McMichael during the investigation. I guess that's never, ever happened before in the history of the United States. An attorney trying to help someone or show them favor. I don't know. Maybe she broke the law. Maybe she did. But given what we've seen happen, even in the last few years, the way attorneys behave all through the Trump-Russia collusion hoax, for example, and every one of them, so many of them, just getting off scot-free, nothing, no problem. Now they get the three convicted of murder. Now they're going after a lady that was trying to give some legal advice to one of them. We've got to get, now this fits the narrative perfectly. I mean, it's not just one lone shooter. It's everyone near him. And now it's people that they contacted on the phone even. You see how it works in this system of injustice? One rule for, and more and more of it, you'll note from these examples, is divided by race. If they're hardened criminals and they're minorities, they're African Americans, let them out of jail. The system's failed them. Give them space. Give them space to destroy. And I mean, if it's a white person caught up in crime of some kind, particularly if it involves another race, you get everything thrown at you. And that's why I guess the Rittenhouse trial really does kind of stand out as something that I think a lot of people expected. That's why there was such an outrage from the radical left when he was acquitted. Because you're just, if they say you're guilty, if you're a white supremacist, if you're a murderer, then they're right. You're not guilty until proven, or not innocent until proven guilty. It's just guilty right away. This can't last for much longer. You can feel, I'll get to some scriptures here in just a second about the injustice, the system of justice that your Bible prophesies, coming out of Micah, the book of Micah, Habakkuk chapter 1, Isaiah 59. You think about those January 6th protesters, something like 650 arrests, and so many of them just for misdemeanors, and then dozens and dozens of them still rotting away in jail. I mean, it's not like the radical left won't lock you up and throw away the keys. They've proven they'll do that in a heartbeat. But then it's the same people that are letting criminals out of jail so that they can continue with their smash and grabs and murder sprees. The Atlantic had a big piece today. January 6th was practice, it says. Donald Trump's GOP is much better positioned to subvert the next election. So here they are talking about stealing the election. They're seriously talking about Donald Trump stealing the 2024 election. Now, you can't talk about the 2020 election, certainly not if you mention the word steal. That's forbidden. That has been censored. The people involved in a protest about the election steal, they are being prosecuted. They are locked up in jail. And I mean, they're searching far and wide for connections, motivations, people who are behind it, except the FBI infiltrators. They're off scot-free. Listen to this from, I think he's the committee chair for the January 6th commission. This is Representative Thompson. I forget the guy that they had subpoenaed. And basically they say, you can hear this guy say that if he comes in, if he responds to the subpoena, if he testifies, but then he declares the fifth, well, what does that prove? Listen to this congressman, clip 6.
We believe Mr. Clark knew about and part of his recommendation. That's why he needs to come before the committee. But if he's saying, okay, I'll come, but I'll plead the fifth, then in some instances, that says you're part and parcel guilty to what occurred.
So he's in the committee that's just trying to get to the facts. That's what they say. And he says if someone pleads the fifth, they're guilty. They're guilty. Never mind the Constitution. Never mind someone's individual rights. They're guilty. I mean, you could see why a lot of people these days would want to plead the fifth, given what they did to General Flynn and others. One little false statement, one little misstatement. And some, like Fauci, of course, they can get away with lying under oath because, well, they're Fauci. Listen to Joe Rogan. He's commenting. This is, again, the man with the most popular podcast. I'm not a fan of his podcast by any means, but you play some of his clips because they are reaching millions and millions of people. And he's exposed lies at CNN. He's exposed grave injustices. And here he is talking about Ray Epps. If anyone, for the ones that did turn violent on January 6th, I mean, if anyone should be prosecuted because they're on film inciting violence, they're on film encouraging people to storm the Capitol. And yet, no arrests made for Ray Epps. Listen to Joe Rogan's commentary on that subject, clip 7.
And that there's this one guy in specific that they've got him isolated on video. They've shown him over and over again. He's faced no legal consequences. They know this guy's name. They know exactly who he is. All these other guys are in jail. All these other guys who got into the Capitol, I mean, there's so many of them are facing like these massive federal charges and 4 years plus in jail. This one guy is like, we have to go in there. We have to take back. We have to get inside there. And people start calling him a Fed in one of these videos. And I think he like takes off and runs away. But this is what it seems like. It seems like, and this is something that governments have done forever. Mm-hmm. Right? You take a peaceful protest. What's the best way to break up a peaceful protest? You bring in agent provocateurs to turn it into a non-peaceful, a violent protest. Smash windows, light things on fire. Then you can send in the troops and you can clean up the mess. And then you don't have any protest anymore.
Yeah, you don't have any protests anymore. And then plus, with the propagandists in the media, you can talk about that insurrection hoax for years and years to come. The Atlantic is devoting this current issue, I believe it's the December issue, and the next one to the subject I just gave to you. Donald Trump's next coup has already begun. So there's all kinds of detail about January 6th and the big lie, the way they see it, 2020. And then, of course, Donald Trump. Now, Donald Trump, 2024, If Trump gets in, will be stolen. 2016, stolen. 2020, perfect. Don't talk about it. If you protest it, you're going to jail. The Atlantic says here, technically, the next attempt to overthrow a national election may not qualify as a coup. It will rely on subversion more than violence, although each will have its place. If the plot succeeds, the ballots cast by American voters will not decide the presidency in 2024. Thousands of votes will be thrown away, or millions, to produce the required effect. The winner will be declared the loser. The loser will be certified president-elect. These are all things that just happened last year. And here's the Atlantic. This, in a lot of ways, sets the tone for the communist media. Trump's next coup has already begun. There was a piece in The Guardian, by the way, a couple weeks ago. This is the title. Terrifying for American democracy. Is Trump planning for a 2024 coup? So you know they know. They know it was stolen last year. They know that Donald Trump's coming back. Or at least that he has the votes to do it. He has the support to do it. And so they're already preparing. They're preparing a narrative that says if he ever gets back in, I mean, this is just January 6th on steroids. And then look at what their soldiers are out doing. Look at the violence they're willing to carry out in just one brief moment or a few seconds. The Waukesha murderer, the black supremacists, mowed down dozens and dozens of people, killed 6. That was so much worse than January 6th. Yet you'd never know it. But when Joe Rogan and, well, you know, Tucker Carlson's had his documentary feature on Patriot Purge, Tucker's got the most, the most highly rated show in cable news. Rogan's got the most popular podcast. You've had a few in Congress. You've had some sources like Revolver News. I mean, people see. It's like that clip we played from from Jesse Waters. They see what they see, the system of justice in this country. They see what's happening in our cities. And so more and more of them are going and buying their own guns so that they can protect themselves. A ticking time bomb. That's what this is. This is one more clip from Joe Rogan's podcast, clip 8.
Because it's a curious case of this one particular individual who's like yelling in these various groups that we have to get in there. And it, like, he did it pre-January 6th. He did it during the January 6th thing. And this guy's faced no legal charges whatsoever.
No legal charges whatsoever for the one that was the most vocal before January 6th, on January 6th. But no, I mean, go. If you can try, if you can get Alex Jones, go after him. If you can get someone else, if you can get a political opponent, not an FBI informant or an infiltrator, they helped us. They helped us stage all of this. Habakkuk 1, I mentioned this. My father's written about this. We actually had a message over the weekend encouraging us to get back into this booklet written quite a number of years ago, 15, 16, 17 years ago. My father, well, this is actually the first two verses. First, it says, "The burden which Habakkuk the prophet did see, O Lord, how long shall I cry, and you will not hear, even cry unto you of violence, and you will not save?" How long is this going to go on? How long is this spate of violence just going to continue and intensify even? Verse 3, it says, "Why do you show me iniquity and cause me to behold grievance? For spoiling and violence are before me, and there are that raise up strife and contention." My father referred to these verses back when we were going through the lawsuit over Mystery of the Ages. And he said, you can see right here that there's just going to be so much corruption in the legal system, in courts, judges, prosecutors, attorneys that should be there upholding the law, upholding the Constitution, applying it fairly. Verse 4, it says, "Therefore the law is slacked, and judgment does never go forth, for the wicked does compass about the righteous. Therefore wrong judgment proceeds." Lang's commentary says, "The sentence goes forth perverted to injustice," I should say. Lots of perverted injustice. Now, to be sure, in any of these incidents I've referred to, there have been crimes. There were crimes on January 6th. The insurrection, the coup, that's a hoax. But there were people that were violent in their behavior. Okay, so prosecute them. Apply the law. And then some of these others that are career-long criminals that are running over girlfriends with their car, keep them in jail in order to protect society, in order to protect 8-year-old boys from being mowed down by an SUV. There have been more communists in the media talking about the SUV as the perpetrator than they have been Daryl Brooks. Wrong judgment proceeds. And this is all within the courts of the land. The Anchor Bible says, "Magistrates have perverted justice. It would mean that a court case takes place, the wicked win the suit." And with respect to our lawsuit over Mystery of the Ages, my father said, look, that should have been an easy case for any judge. Now, there were some judges that ruled in our favor, and there were some that didn't. It was a 6-year struggle. You can read a lot more about it in Raising the Ruins. But given the fruits of the Worldwide Church of God following the death of Mr. Armstrong, given what they were doing to the work, what they were saying about Mr. Armstrong, he's a heretic, he never was educated, he was ignorant, he taught false doctrine. And then we come into court and you have people representing those corrupt ministers saying things like, well, hey, we value Mystery of the Ages. We want to hold on to Mystery of the Ages. They have no right to go print it. And then in another forum, they say, we've got a Christian duty to keep this book out of print. And then they come into court and say, well, now, we didn't really mean that. The lies, it should have been so easy for any judge and any lawyer, any attorney, to see that these people want to bury truth. Truth, at least, it's truth to us in the Philadelphia Church of God. And this is a free society. And you can't just ban books. You can't just burn books in America, can you? And yet here were some judges that just kind of get caught up into, well, they did say this, and this came out of this deposition. Should have been an easy case to determine, but it's not so easy in these last days when you're in a court of law. So much of it depends on the way the judge thinks and what sort of activist groups the judges support. I remember it was during, I've told this story before, but it was during the Mystery of the Ages lawsuit, December 6th, I think it was 1999, we were out in Southern California, there before the Ninth Circuit, oral arguments. We had won at the district level. The Worldwide Church of God appealed that decision. It goes before the three-judge panel at the Ninth Circuit. And, of course, months later, they would rule against us 2-1. And one of those that ruled against us, we had heard this oral argument where our attorney was just brilliant and really defended the truth so well and spoke with clarity and conviction our cause. And then that night we were told, okay, it's probably going to take 7, 8, 9 months before they actually come out with their ruling. But that night we were walking the streets of Pasadena to get a bite to eat. And as it happens, we came right up on one of these two judges that would later rule against us. And except in this case, he's not in his formal-looking black robe. He was just in a casual outfit. And I thought, well, this is just a regular old human being. This is just a guy on the street. He's very well educated. I'm not knocking that. I mean, he's a judge. He's there to administer justice, to make rulings. But he's also a human being subject to the very same pulls of the flesh, the very same influences from the devil that we all have to fight against. The Bible says that in these last days, the wicked would encompass the righteous and that wrong judgment would precede. Have we seen a lot of this? My father says in the Habakkuk booklet, there's a warning in all this for the court system. It's true that God will condemn the Laodiceans, but he will also condemn the courts of this land. They have never had an easier case to decide than this one, speaking of Mystery of the Ages. Their bad judgment condemns them. Their time is coming. The final judgment is almost here. I mean, these were decisions and judges and rulings from 20 years ago, 18, 19, 20 years ago. And look at our system of justice today. Look at the penalties applied in certain cases as compared to other cases. Isaiah 59, let's look at a few verses over there. It says in verse 3, for your hands are defiled with blood and your fingers with iniquity. Your lips have spoken lies. Your tongue has muttered perverseness. None calls for justice, verse 4 says, nor any pleads for truth. They trust in vanity and speak lies. They conceive mischief and bring forth iniquity. This is an end time prophecy. None calls for justice. None pleads for the truth. I mean, in so many of these cases, they did it with the Rittenhouse case. These prosecutors that came out with charges just, what, within days? And then here's this district attorney up in Michigan that comes out just in a matter, before the sheriff even knows. She comes out and says, yeah, we're going after the parents too. And then the parents, of course, they take off. They get $4,000 out of a cash machine, and they're on the run. And the police, you know, the ones we're supposed to defund, the police are there saying, well, could you tell us? We'll help you out. But so many of these radical leftist attorneys, funded in many cases by George Soros, they want to empty out the prisons, except for the Trump protesters. They want to empty out the prisons. They want to get rid of the bail. And then if there's problems, well, you can always blame COVID. Come on, it's COVID. What are we going to do about the 30% increase in homicides? Well, you can't really do anything because of COVID. Now it's Omicron. So we got to shut everything down even more so. And never mind the skyrocketing crime in places like New York City. Listen, by the way, listen to this. This is the de Blasio clip from just earlier this morning. His decree in New York City.
We've got Omicron as a new factor. We've got the colder weather, which is going to really create additional challenges with the Delta variant. We've got holiday gatherings. We in New York City have decided to use a preemptive strike to really do something bold to stop the further growth of COVID and the dangers it's causing to all of us. So as of today, we're going to announce a first-in-the-nation measure. Our health commissioner will announce a vaccine mandate for private sector employers across the board. All private sector employers in New York City will be covered by this vaccine mandate as of December 27th. We're going to have some other measures as well to really focus on maximizing vaccination quickly so we can get ahead of Omicron and all the other challenges we're facing right now with COVID.
Omicron. That's the excuse for this latest vaccine mandate. And keep in mind, everywhere along the way, and the Biden people, they knew this. They knew it wouldn't hold up in court, but they issued the decree anyway to just apply pressure, not even just on the federal agencies, not even just on federal employees, but on private companies too. Everywhere along the way in court, it's been shot down. They know it's unconstitutional. They know it's illegal. De Blasio knows. He knows it's not holding up in court. But do you think that matters? Do you think that slows him down? He's out this morning. The first in the nation to go after a vaccine mandate on the private sector. Everybody. It's across the board. And whether or not it's lawful, it doesn't matter. You just do as we say. We know it's right for our community. We know that Omicron's going to kill everybody. And so obey our orders. It wasn't that long ago. I forget who the New York official was. It might have even been Cuomo before he was run out of town. That said there's more people in New York City being murdered than dying from COVID. But you'd never know it. Listening to Mayor de Blasio, the good comrade, because he's a communist. He's a communist through and through. So all that you need to know about if you're living in New York City is that Omicron is going to kill you, not a murderer, not a criminal. And then here you hear from that law enforcement official from the other side of the country telling people in California to stay home at night. It's too dangerous. Isaiah 59 and verse 7, it says, their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed innocent blood. Their thoughts are thoughts of iniquity. Wasting and destruction are in their paths. They don't know the way to peace, as the next verse says, verse 8. Verse 9, therefore is judgment far from us, neither justice. Neither does justice overtake us or wait for light, but behold obscurity for brightness. But we walk in darkness. We just stumble along in darkness. Verse 10 says, we grope for the wall like the blind, and we grope as if we had no eyes. We stumble at noonday as in the night. We are in desolate places as dead men. We roar like bears and mourn sore like doves and look for judgment, but there is none. There's no judgment. We're looking, we're searching and searching for it, but there's no judgment. And so the transgressors or transgressions, it says in verse 12, they multiply before us. This is all happening. It's all happening on the streets of America and really throughout Israel. They come out with these grand decrees thinking that's going to just solve all the problems of the world. And this is not covered either. Protests every weekend all over the world against this sort of thing from Comrade de Blasio. Tens of thousands of people showing up in a city near you, Ireland, all across Europe, Australia. They're fed up. They're fed up with the vaccine mandates. They'd rather our officials deal with the skyrocketing crime statistics, but they won't do it. None call for justice. This world is on edge. This world is about to explode in violence. It's already starting. We're getting a foretaste of it. It's happening in broad daylight. And these criminals know, well, so what if I get arrested? Particularly if you're in places like California. I can get out with no bail even. Daryl Brooks got out on $1,000 after he ran over his girlfriend. And then he went on the Waukesha rampage. And the press would like to cover all that up. Verse 15, it says, yes, truth fails, and he that departs from evil makes himself a prey. My father wrote an article a year ago, the Bible reveals America's courts are corrupt. That's a pretty important article from November 30th, 2020. The Bible reveals that America's courts are corrupt. He talks a lot about the election steal. This was just 4 weeks or so after what happened back in November of 2020. My father writes here, God is addressing the heads of Israel, the rulers, magistrates, and government officials responsible for upholding the law. Their responsibility is to give justice based on law. They, of all people, ought to understand judgment. You see, of all people, they should know. They should know. We went through that Supreme Court oral argument from last week over the Mississippi ban on abortions after 15 weeks. And remember Sotomayor's response to the lawyer who said, well, this is why we want to make sure, even if it is controversial, even if the people don't like it, this is why we want to make sure that it's based on the Constitution, that it's based on the supreme law. And basically, Sotomayor was saying, no, you better make sure that the people that would take to the streets and potentially burn down the cities. She didn't say all this, but that's really what she was implying. If you don't make the right ruling here, she's speaking to the rest of the justices on the bench, then I don't know how we can survive. I mean, it's a threat, basically. They want to let the soldiers out of the prisons, so they have plenty of people who are there to smash and grab and burn and loot. And murder, in some cases. Thank God for the kingdom. God's kingdom. We talked a lot about it in class this morning. The millennium, the wonderful world tomorrow. So many passages of Scripture that speak to it. Revelation 20 and Zechariah 14, so much detail. Hundreds of prophecies, really, when you take into account all that the Bible says about the return of Christ and the wonderful world tomorrow. Herbert Armstrong had a book that went by that very name, and we offer it freely on our website, thetrumpet.com, and on this program. If you want to call our operators, the toll-free number here in the U.S. and Canada, 1-866-930-3024. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Send us an email, td@thetrumpet.com. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.